Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Global Village International Radio Show with your hosts, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell and Doug Bentley, with tonight's guest, Ezra Olgut, who's discussing creating abundance through expanding your consciousness. Ezra is a transformational coach and a Kundalini yoga instructor. After a near-death experience, she had a dramatic shift that helped her develop a path to self-help and eventual manuscript to help others. And she teaches her followers to ask, how do we make up and recognize how we create our own problems? How do we manage our egos? And how do we recognize our limited belief system? She's got an exciting story. Now, here's your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Today I have a wonderful and amazing person, Ezra Olgut, who is going to talk about her life story and how she achieved great success and where she is. She's a world traveler, and she's speaking to us somewhere in Europe now. I think it's Turkey. She's on the move, and we're going to find out where she's going here and there. And God bless you for being here all in one piece. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and we look forward to finding out more about your wonderful book, Money Does Grow on Trees. And I'm interested in that. Of course, our whole audience is. But more importantly, when you started out in life, did you ever think you were going to be where you are now, a world traveler with a successful business and a book and a wonderful husband? How did it start out for you?
No, I mean, I was always, let's say, a believer of fairy tales, but since I was always told that what I believe is a fairy tale, I wasn't quite sure I was going to get there. But I could say with much confidence that pretty much eventually, it took a long journey, I got into a fairy tale in regarding to every single department of my life.
Wow. Well, tell us how you got to on your fairy trail. I know yoga was part of it.
Yeah.
I know you were doing some little searches for your soulmate. And, you know, tell us about your life. You were at UCLA and you have a bachelor's degree. So, you know, you're a smart lady. Tell us about yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, my father, he was a diplomat, a Turkish diplomat. So I kind of, from the get-go, lived in a different country every 4 years of my life, which was on the one hand, very beautiful, very cultural, very colorful. But on the other hand, growing up, it was really kind of hard because every 4 years, especially when you're moving back and forth between Turkey and Europe, between Muslim schools and Christian schools, you know, you're all the time having these changing values. What is great in one place is like a terrible thing to do in another place and vice versa. So although those times were very confusing, in a way very ungrounded, not at all feeling safe, and all those kind of feelings at the same time, I think it was a great training ground to see how much all of our lives and the way we live, whether it's individually or culturally or as a country, what we call reality is basically a construct of our perception. So I got kind of introduced, let's say, into the mastery of that through the style of my life very early on. I was a great lover of America because I loved everything the Constitution was about, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of thought. And of course, when you come from a, you know, Muslim culture, there's less of that. So I made up my mind, I'm going to America no matter what. My parents were completely against it. They didn't allow it. I had hardly any money. I had about $2,000 saved. And I found a scholarship at UCLA because there's no other way I could come. Even the scholarship and studying film was a part of just being able to get to the States. I had to find a thing that I couldn't do in Turkey. So it would be a good argument to my parents as to why I have to end up in America. Anyway, that didn't work either. But yeah, I just grabbed my $2,000 and just, you know, showed up in Los Angeles, California.
Wow.
And it
leap
started
of faith.
There.
Oh my gosh. So listen, when you're traveling around, how many languages do you speak, or did you pick up? You must have had some.
Just, you know, my English is pretty good, as you can see. A little bit of Spanish, which, you know, I forgot. Like, I'm definitely not fluent in Spanish. And because I was, you know, forced to learn every single language, I'm like, no, I'm not going to learn. I was too busy just trying to make it in all these different cultures. So, you know, of course, I understand very quickly different languages, but yeah, just two.
Okay, well, I asked that.
Well,
I tried once.
Turkish.
I've tried. Yeah, your English is very well, very. And I've traveled quite a bit myself, so you know, time differences, cultures, as you said, what's acceptable in one place is not, you know, it's taboo in another. So. Well said. For people who haven't traveled as much as you, it's something to consider. And here you are on your own, determined to come to America, $2,000 in your hand, and you come all this way. You didn't know anybody. You had no support. You are a brave gal. Holy moly.
Thank you so much.
So what happened on that first day? Let's just take you back a little bit. When you arrived, what happened that first day?
Well, it was really interesting, actually, that you asked that specific question, because, you know, when I was in Turkey and, you know, I would go to school here, we would have these ceremonies just before we started school where, you know, you have to stand like a soldier and, you know, pay respects to the flag and all these things. And I never kind of liked doing that, those ceremonies. And I'll never forget, as I was landing in LAX, it was sunset. It was just this most beautiful orange yellow color. And I felt so victorious about making my dream finally come true, which was a story within itself, which ties into actually how we create our reality, which maybe I'll get into later. But anyway, as soon as I landed and I was going through the passport control, I saw the American flag and I just started bawling. I don't know what came over me. I was just like crying so hard that the passport person was so worried about me. You know, he's like saying, ma'am, are you okay? Are you okay? And I couldn't really like explain because I didn't know what was going on. So it was a very, very kind of, I don't know, as if I'm coming home, as if I'm coming somewhere familiar, although I had never even stepped foot on the continent as a tourist. So that was my first arrival.
I find that amazing, Esther. Absolutely amazing. But I know you look at the flag and all those ideas of freedom. And from, I suspect, as a young lady, attractive lady, and an ambassador's child, you had to be minding your P's and Q's, as we say, your manners, and you were always under scrutiny. And, you know, probably, you know, a lot of authoritarian stuff for a young lady. And so when you here you are all by yourself, all alone, first day, and oh my God, you have this emotional. I can just see the customs officer saying, "What's the matter? What did we do?
Like, what did we do? Yeah, how did we offend her?"
Yeah.
I'm like, no offense, none whatsoever. So yeah, I mean, I was very. You know, the expected thing in the East, and let's say countries, again, predominantly Muslim ones, you know, there's kind of a set way that your life should be. You know, you go to school, you graduate, you do well, and then you find a husband, and then you get married, and then you have children. And that I knew that wasn't for me. So, and I really, I think, wanted to prove to myself that I can make it on my own. So that's why, you know, instead of having the comfy life I could have had in Turkey, I was just dead set to just see what I can do just on my own, which now in retrospect was like one of the most empowering steps I took in my life. But of course, it wasn't easy. I was going to school, UCLA, studying film, trying to work in the film business. Not much was happening. And at such a young age, 23, 24, as you said, you know, not much, I didn't know anybody. And it got hard after a while. So I went to the opposite direction of drugs and alcohol and, you know, kind of, you know, for a while really lost myself. And then there came a point where I realized that I had a lot of healing to do. And I realized, I think I was maybe by that time, 25, 26, I can't remember, but early 20s. And I realized that with the amount of turmoil going on inside of me, there's no way I'm going to make it in the world or be successful or be happy. So although some great stuff happened in the business world where I got to, you know, work with Oliver Stone, you know, some stuff did start eventually after many years happening. I just, you know, made a choice where I said, you know, I'm either going to like not continue, period, the way I'm feeling, this miserable, or my life has to change ASAP. And the minute I made that decision, and in our system, we call it a being choice. When with all of your being, you decide what it is very clearly that you're going to belong to or not belong to. Immediately the next day, I found Kundalini Yoga. I was just walking, you know, just walking around. I mean, I said, either my life is over, not that I would have dared to take my own life, but, you know, it was like that kind of a decision, or my life is changing 180 degrees now. And the next day I remember, because of stuff that was going on, I was walking around the block crying and I saw this red brick, you know, building. And I was like, oh, interesting. I wonder what they do here. I went in, it was Kundalini Yoga. I did my first class. I bawled my eyes were just like full of tears, bawling my eyes out. And that was the beginning of my healing journey.
Well, in my world, I'm thinking, there you were going through a crisis and you started to move. You went out, you were walking, and kind of your maybe spiritual, subconscious, super subconscious, and you are is working, and you arrive at this building with no intention, no preconceived notion, nothing. You just kind of let the universe guide you. And you had this amazing experience.
Exactly. I mean, I love that saying in English, when you're ready, the teacher shows up. And I say, when you're ready, the universe shows up. Each and every time. It never misses a beat.
Well, as you know, many people are going through times and you counsel them. And I'm going to ask you about how you and your husband help people this way. But you're on the same path that people now who come to you are on. And so you have experience, and through that experience, you have the wisdom. Plus you have this spiritual side of you that's developing and has developed. And obviously I'm just sitting here listening to your story and thinking what a courageous person you are, but how you met your destiny. And you knew you had to be where you were at that point in time and end up at that yoga studio. So tell us, how did you get from there to helping people and then writing this amazing book that money does grow on trees?
Well, thank you so much. Well, Kundalini Yoga really kind of, let's say, healed me emotionally, because its vibration is really so high as a technique, that doing that day in and day out and day in and day out really kind of, let's say, brought me back from feeling dead. It brought me back to life. But just because I was feeling better and my frequency had like gone up compared to where it was before, meaning on the floor, it didn't mean that my life got any easier. So I was having amazing money problems, having a hard time paying rent. You know, besides doing yoga and beginning to slowly teach yoga, I kind of was really, really struggling with money.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I made a being choice. And by being choice, again, you know, people think that we solve our problems through doing. You know, do, we're taught from school, do, have, be. But interestingly enough, the opposite for manifesting, for creating, the opposite formula is necessary, which is be, out of that state of beingness, act, and then you will have. So I had just recently met my boyfriend, now my husband, and I realized I'm in my mid-30s, and if I, you know, decided to have a baby with him, I couldn't even afford to have a baby. And this whole idea was so ridiculous to me all of a sudden that I'll never forget the day and the moment where I got up from the sofa, and again, I made a decision, which we call a being choice, and I said, I am never, ever going to experience money problems again. Soon after, I met my mentor, and what was, I mean, this story is really interesting because he pretty much figured me out through two questions in the very first session.
Really?
And yeah.
What and were those questions?
Well, he was like, so he basically, you know, I told him how, you know, even if I'm successful, like working with Oliver Stone, as I was in the past, like money never seems to come, always there's some sort of a problem. So he said to me, Esther, just figure out, you know, whatever is your first story that you made up in your relationship to money. And just, of course, it wasn't this simple. You know, he asked a series of questions with a certain technique until I, bam, got into the memory of being 7 years old. And I'm sitting in the living room. I have grown-ups, my grandparents as friends, and they're all talking about the concept of a girl who was very young, got married to a very older doctor, and they're saying, well, great, she did really well, she did a good marriage, she married for money. Woman should marry for money.
Uh-oh.
Woman who marry for love are stupid.
Uh-oh.
They shouldn't marry for money. And I'm like, as a seven-year-old, listening to all of this, and I get kind of really mad, and I get really anxious, and I go to the bathroom, and I look at the mirror, and I say, and this is how we create our belief systems, our own myths that later on create us. I very specifically stood in front of the mirror and I said, I will always follow the way of love and I will never follow the way of money.
Oh
so
my
basically,
God.
In my psyche, I split or I created a belief system that money and love don't go together. And I made a decision as to what I'm going to belong. So when I re-remembered the seven-year-old girl's decision about money, I was just so blown away as to how successfully I had experienced up to my mid-30s. I was at like 32, 33 at this point, how successfully that scenario had been created in my life. And that was such a bam awakening of empowerment for me because it made me realize none of us are victims at any point in time. We're all experiencing scenarios or myths that we have created. And life is nothing but a perfect, you know, theater with the perfect decor and the perfect actors providing to us the myths that we've created. So my whole issue with money, what I didn't like, that I rejected, interestingly enough, became my biggest kind of point of awakening, the biggest problem.
Wow.
And as soon as I saw my myth and I said, oh my God, you know, a seven-year-old is like controlling my entire financial life. I said, you know, no way. And then from then on, with that no way, and of course, a couple of other things, this prosperity started flowing because it was just a mindset that needed to change.
We'll be right back after this short break.
We're so glad you tuned in tonight to the Global Village Radio Show with Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. We'll be back in just a few moments. You're invited to embark on your own spiritual journey today by discovering the expansive works and services from Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Elevate your being physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Visit DouglasJamesCottrell.com. With over a dozen enlightening books and meditative audio downloads to help guide you through life's complexities. Delve deep into the mysteries of human consciousness, the future, and the spiritual realm. As the author of Secrets of Life, The Complete New Age Health Guide, Conversations with the Akashic Field, and more, Douglas opens the doors to realms most people only dream of visiting. The writings of Dr. Douglas James Cottrell are based on his unique ability to visit the Akashic Field, where all knowledge since the dawn of man is stored. You can read about the predictions, many of which have already come true, and planetary changes, health remedies, human growth are all written. Go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and view the selections of books and MP3 audio available now. That's DouglasJamesCottrell.com. Welcome back to the Global Village with tonight's guest, Esra Ulgut, who's discussing creating abundance through expanding your consciousness. Esra is a transformational coach and Kundalini yoga instructor. After nearly drowning, she experienced a life-changing consciousness shift that helped her develop a path of self-help and eventual manuscript to help others. She teaches her followers to ask, how do we wake up and recognize how we create our own problems? How do we manage our egos? And how do we recognize our limited belief system? Esra gives answers to these and many more life-changing questions. We're not taking phone calls this hour, but in the second hour, we'll be talking to you. Now, once again, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Just before the break, you were talking about a seven-year-old child looking in the mirror and basically listening to authorities, parents, and by believing what they said or resisting what they said, sabotaging your financial livelihood for the rest of your life up until your mid-30s. And then amazingly, you have this mentor who, in a short order, somehow you get back to that point. And that original wounding, you see it, you recognize it, and then that determination kicks in again. You know, here's that determination, and you strike out in a new path. It obviously is successful. So now you have a business coaching and helping people. And tell us about that.
Well, you know, when our lives and the same thing happened to my husband, we actually, back then, boyfriend, girlfriend, we were being mentored by the same coach, same transformational coach. And we actually studied with him for 20 years. So it was a very, very long mentoring every week. Well, what happened is the more we understood how our belief systems that we have chosen to believe, you know, we can call it a wounding, and sometimes it's not even a wounding. It's just simple decisions that we make as children about life. You know, we see our parents interact and maybe we create a story about what marriage is or whatever it is. You know, we look at finances and we say, oh, this is what finance is. If my father is working too hard, let's say, and he's not ever present at home and loving at home, then, oh, maybe finances, you know, kills freedom, right? So you come to a conclusion, you arrive at a conclusion, and that becomes, you know, your story about how you interact and create that thing. So the more we could, with awareness, see our limitations with, you know, with my husband being coached together, the more our lives got freed up. And because people could see that example, then clients began to flow in. And basically in our coaching, you know, the major thing that we do is show people who have a problem, who have a struggle, or who just simply want to do better, get them to discover their own belief systems, their own database, their own library. And when you can get the person to see for themselves, instead of giving the person the answers, because the answers aren't within us, it's within that person. That's the empowerment point. When they do the discovery, when they see the coding, the library, then they become freed up to change it as they please. And it's actually kind of very easy. This is supposedly what she wants. She just began sweating and sweating and sweating and sweating and sweating.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, and she starts taking off the jacket and I'm like, okay, there we go. So what's going on? And she's like, oh my God, I just feel so much shame. And I'm like, ah, interesting. Money, shame, supposedly you want it, but you're feeling so much shame. Okay, let's go a little deeper. What is the thought that you're having that's creating the emotion of shame? Because every emotion we have is like a blueprint of whatever thought pattern we have going on behind. So as soon as she could connect to the emotion, immediately the belief system came through, and her specific belief system was, if I have more, others will have less because of me.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. It's a very typical pattern. It's one of the typical ones out there.
Really?
And then further. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like, you know, let's be good. Let's all share, you know, because there's like not enough to go around. So if I take more, others will suffer because of me. And then what will that make you? A bad person.
And that's very common. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I know people sometimes don't want to make more than their friends, so they kind of conform, you know, they give money away because they don't want people to say, who do they think they are? They think they're, you know, with money that they're, and of course there are people who go the other way around. They just spend the money ridiculously and they end up back where they started from. But that's a new one. That people would feel so ashamed, at least to me, a new one, that people would feel ashamed because they had more than other people. But that makes perfect sense to me, you know?
Well, if you feel the shame, that's why she hadn't manifested much in her life. You see what I mean? Like, keep yourself small because you don't want to be the bad person, because that's the, you know, belief system. But there are as many belief systems as there are
people, yeah. For all these motivational books about the law of manifestation, the law of attraction, and, you know, there's now a new law out. It's called the, I think his name is John St. Paul. He has a new book out called Not Affirmations, but Affirmations. And it's kind of similar to what you're saying, but that was, to me, a very important point, that people would be ashamed to be rich or to make money because they might be taking away from somebody else. So if you want to follow up on that, and I think you have another example or two, you might be able to help us out with understanding that.
Yeah, I mean, there, as I said, there's as many different myths as there are people. So this just one, you know, one reason where people don't choose to manifest is when they have an unconscious belief system, you know, where they feel, again, it comes from the, even the below belief system underneath that is that money sources are limited. So if we believe money resources are limited and we don't believe like there is unlimited abundance, like in nature, in the world, in the universe, and we believe the sources are limited, then there's like two things, two directions we're going to go.
Mm.
Think of it as a little cake that comes. You know, there's only 10 pieces. Either you're going to be the greedy one. Because there isn't enough, you're going to want to eat all the slices before anybody else gets their hands on it. Or you're going to do the opposite. You're going to be like, oh, let me take the smallest piece and let me take, as you know, maybe just one bite because I want everyone at the table to eat. You know, so one looks like a really kind of the bad guy and the other one looks like, oh, such a nice, sweet person. But regardless of the, let's say, character or the projection, the underneath belief system isn't even dissimilar. It's the exact same one. Money sources are limited. So all I'm saying here is, yeah, we make up our own stories about what something is. And exactly according to that belief system, the manifestation happens. So this whole idea of like, oh, I have to learn how to manifest. No, you don't have to learn how to manifest. You already know how to manifest. You're doing it every second of your life. But instead of all the time going after what you want to manifest, first see how you're manifesting the unwanted, because there's a great amount of information there.
I love that. That is amazing. That's wisdom. Really, people should pay attention. Say that again.
Okay. I was saying that, you know, instead of everyone being so gung-ho about like, oh, let me manifest this and let me manifest that, as if it's something that you need to learn from a book. No, we are all in, for me, my belief is that we're all, you know, the universe individualized. So the power that's going through us, every single one of us, doesn't matter our culture, doesn't matter our education, as the potential is the same. How we use it is a different thing. That's a personal choice. But as a potential, we're all a part of that infinite, you know, wisdom and ability to create, ability to manifest. But people are so busy trying to learn or trying to, you know, create what they want, they're not looking at what they're creating today. Like, how are you creating the limitation? How are you creating the disease? How are you creating the lack of prosperity? Because when you wake up to that, it's such a self-discovery. When you see it's not because of the economy, it's not because of your parents, it's not because you, you know, you got the dealt the unlucky cards. No, it has nothing to do with any of it except you. It's a great moment of, let's say, rude awakening.
Well, you know, it, you know, truth is a bitter pill to swallow, that's for sure. But you just hit on something that I think many, many people ought to know. It's what are you manifesting now that's preventing you to go or get where you want to go or get? I mean, that's so simple and yet so profound. Money does grow on trees. Tell us a little bit about that. There's got to be a ton of wisdom in that book.
Thank you. This is really
good to know.
Well, money does grow on trees. When I first came up with the name, I thought I was so original. I was so happy. And then by the time it came on Amazon, there was about 20 other books with the same name. So thank God, in brackets, I put the myths that we create and live by. So, yeah, we have a certification program. We have workshops. And our certification program that at the moment we're mostly doing it for Turkish people, it lasts about a year and a half. So it's kind of like a school. But the results we've had has been like so amazing, so profound that I was like, you know what? Even if it's just like one tiny little bit of it, I need to put this into a book. So it's kind of a long book. It has a lot of exercises. To make the most of it, it needs your interaction because nothing just happens by reading. You know, knowledge. So there's exercises there. And I put like little pieces of actually what we do in our certification course. How do we find our limiting belief systems? How do we wake up to how we're creating the problem? Which I think is very important.
I really do too. I think that's the next one.
Yeah, it's a different perspective, I know. How do we learn to manage our ego? How the ego is not an enemy. It's actually a very important function. And if we can see it as a function instead of as an enemy, then we can get very good at managing it. You know, understanding the separation between us and ego. Because when those get confused, it's a bit of a problem.
That's a really good point. I put it this way. People come to me and as a counselor and they say, I want to kill my ego. And I said, why would you want to do that? Well, you know, it's preventing me. It's this and that. I said, no, you don't misunderstand. There is a difference between self-esteem and being egotistical. You don't want to be egotistical. You want to have a good, solid, you know, psyche, a good core, a good ego, a good who identity of who you are. So bringing that up is again, it's to have that fortitude that a little girl decides to leave her home country in Europe after being dragged over all these different countries, bouncing around with different people and different cultures, with her father being an important diplomat, and then jumping on an airplane and going to a faraway place across this great big ocean. I was going to say almost never to return, but You did.
I did, but just very recently. So I have been there like for most of my life.
Well, you know, there was your pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, so to speak. But it does take tenacity. And you've mentioned a lot of points that I think people should pay attention to, and that is self-determination. Don't give up. When you're at the threshold, take that step through it and find out what's holding you back. I love that. I've never had anybody articulate it so well as you have to say you're manifesting, if you will, your own blocks or failure or challenges right now and learning about them. That's just like take the handcuffs off, right? You're free.
Exactly. Very well put. Yeah, exactly. What a beautiful, imagery. Yeah.
Yeah. But
take
you did
the handcuffs
it.
Off.
You did it. Yeah. I've used that one in other lectures I've done myself. So, yeah. But it's just coming back to mind listening to you. You're a delightful person. You're a courageous lady, and I'm not flattering you. And you have this book. Now, when you said it's a long book, I'm thinking that's a lot better than those little thin books that you buy for $20. If you read the last page, you got it all.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the chapters and some of the things you alluded to in your book. I think it's important that people buy your book. Money does grow on trees. And then get it on Amazon. Do you have a website too, by the way? Or
yes. The English, we did create an English website. It's www.ikeandesranow.com. That is ikeandesranow.com. And yeah, the book is mainly sold on Amazon and, you know, some other book places that I don't remember the name of, but we don't sell it from the website. So Amazon would be the place to go. Oh God, there's so many subjects. I think again, how we manage the ego. Ego is an important one. I think we have a very different perspective through our mentor that we've been taught that has been so, so helpful to us to figure, you know, to really become masters of manifestation in our own lives. And that is to see the ego as a very grounding, very necessary function. Kind of if we are the ones creating the scenarios of our lives, I see that as like almost like a computer programmer that goes in and says, oh, money's a bad thing because whatever, you know, because it takes away freedom, or money is a bad thing because others will have less because of me and I don't want to be a bad person.
Well,
so you are the writer, you're the programmer, you go into the computer, you put in the program, and the screen can only show you whatever you programmed. It can't show you something different. And that's life. That's life reflecting our own belief systems, like very precisely, without a mistake, straight back at us. And ego is the database. Ego is the part that keeps those belief systems in place so that it can be experienced as a reality by us. If the ego disappeared, we'd wake up the next morning, I'd wake up and I wouldn't even recognize my husband because there isn't a mechanism to remind me that the one I've married is my husband. So that's not a good idea. To throw the ego is not a good idea.
That would be a problem, I'm sure. Who are you? Oh my God. But, you know, like the cliches come back, money is the root of all evil, people always want more than they need, you know, there's lots of people telling you what you don't need and trying to redirect your life, as you've said throughout this interview. And having a good ego and having a good self-esteem also means having desires. Yeah. And it's okay to have desires. And what I'm listening to you is that you're really wise. You chose what you wanted, and then you walked through the threshold. You know, you got on that plane, you went through that yoga studio, you met your husband. I mean, those are all things that take affirmative action, but you decided that without having a counselor and a coach and things like that to guide you. How did you do that? Where did you manifest that ego, that self fortification? Where did that come from, you think?
I think it came a lot from contrast. It came a lot from not feeling free and not wanting to live that way. It came a lot from kind of like lack of self-worth. and wanting to move towards worth. So, you know, I think people always complain kind of when we have a hardship in life, and yet those hardships, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way, but the hardships contain amazing gifts for us. The contrast that those difficult challenges create then the dreams that we run after. So for me, my theme, I think, throughout my life was my freedom. It was so important to me to free myself from, you know, patterns of society, of how I'm expected to live or how I'm expected to be, free from depending on other sources to create my life. I think I was always searching for my inner power. And I think now that you ask, I mean, just now it came to me, and actually this is in the book too, but I think I also had a near-death experience when I was 16.
Really?
So I think, yeah, I think
tell
that
us about
also.
That.
Yeah.
Us about.
Well, I was 16 year old and we were interrailing with friends, 16 or 17, just, you know, graduating from high school. And we were interrailing around Europe with my friends. And we were in the southern part of France and we went to the beach. And there were red flags not to go into the water. And the waves seemed super small to me. So my smart friends, they stayed behind. And I said, I'm this Turkish girl. Nothing will happen to me. These are nothing for me, you know? And
yep,
just went inside the water.
Don't tell me no, I'm doing this. There's Estra's personality. Don't tell me no. Okay.
Yeah, Douglas, you got me. And so I dove into the waves, and then there was this like insane undercurrent or undertow, whatever it was, that just took me in. So I was just like in this washing machine, and just not like whatever I tried, I kept on going in the wrong direction because you get so disoriented.
Was a rip tide, I guess you were in.
I guess, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what it's called. And I just was holding my breath, holding like in this fear, knowing that if I dare open my mouth, I'm gone.
Wow.
So while I'm in this fear, all of a sudden I heard this voice on my right ear of like, I guess, a guide, or like it was a kind of male voice right here, as if you're yelling at me with a megaphone. And the word I heard was, this is the dream, you're about to wake up, meaning death is the waking.
Wow.
So when I heard that, there was like such a kind of a flood of remembrance coming back all of a sudden, where I'm like, oh yeah, this is the dream, I'm going home. And as soon as I was like, oh, I'm going home, forget about the fear, there was this excitement to kind of go home. I was completely relaxed. And the minute I got into that state of relaxation in my body, very quickly I saw moments, like super fast moments of my life, where I either gave love or I received love.
Oh,
I
my
remember
God.
Thinking like, oh my God, this is the most important thing. This love thing is the most important thing. How could I forget this? How could I forget this? And then bam, I was out of the body. But it was still like a me, a consciousness, but of course way wider than anything I was about down here. And the frequency of love and the frequency of peace. And there was like zero fear, zilch fear, zilch drama. You know, if let's say somebody was, I don't know, raping my beloved or whatever, you know, from that perspective, it's like, don't worry. You know, it's just a dream. You'll wake up. No big deal. That's the perspective there.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know what I mean, yeah?
Yeah. They're, okay, so that's when you have a Kundalini experience and you get to that point where you're surrounded with love, you say, I've said that almost same words. You don't care about anything. So here you are, were you floating above, looking down? Where, what happened? We can hardly wait.
Well,
did you live?
I don't know, maybe not. I'm just a projection over here.
What happened? What happened at that moment? That is an amazing spiritual revelation.
It was such a kind of an evolving, like stage by stage, you know, it felt like longer than 16 years, whatever I was experiencing. After that whole, you know, love thing and this peace and this fearlessness. I kept on saying, how did I forget this? How do we, not just me though, how do we forget this? How do we forget this? Like, it seems so ridiculous that we ever even have fear, like a tingle of fear in that perspective. And then I saw like little parts of me, like other parts of me, I could sense, I couldn't see what they were doing, but there were other me's around.
Really?
And then like it kind of expanded even more. And you know how they say all knowing, all seeing, that's how it was. I was all knowing. I had no question. I knew everything there was to know. I thought of my mom. I could see her like doing something in the kitchen. Like I could just should project, see,
right.
And it was fine. Then I could come back and there was a sense of oneness. Then it expanded even more. I was me. I was the wave. I was the ocean. I was that crazy struggling body that had nothing to do with me, like a piece of clothing in the sea. And then there were the stars, the universe, and there was no I. At the very end of it, there was no even sense of I separate from anything. Then a separation started where in my brain I said, oh my God, what would it be like to live having remembered all of this and being like this, but in the body, thinking I could bring all that into the body. And as soon as I had the thought, bam, I was back in the body. Another wave came. And like the movie Moana, it like brought me to the shore without me at all struggling. Yeah. And then of course I ran for my life and I was in ecstasy, like crazy ecstasy for 3 days.
And then,
I went right back to depression.
I love it. Oh, gosh. What you're describing is a place I've been. I call it the middle mind. You're aware of everything all in the same moment. And to a finite mind, how can you be aware of all these different things far away, near, that there's no time, right? You're just in a timeless moment. But that's an amazing experience. And you sound to me like you were on your way. And then for whatever reason, you said, why can't I bring this and live this way? And then you come back. And then like a hand, I can see the hand of God underneath you kind of, you know, pushing you like a surfboard through the water up to the beach.
Exactly. That's why I love the Moana cartoon, you know, because it's like exactly that's how the wave, you know, gets her and brings her to the shore. And two things I really kind of, well, three, how we are all one, how we are all a part of that creator, creation, all is one, all is the same on that bigger picture, bigger level. Death is a choice because clearly I was on my way out and clearly I was curious all of a sudden, because I really thought I wouldn't forget everything that happened there. I don't know if I would have come back if I knew I was going to again forget everything. I just thought I wasn't going to forget. And I'm sure, like, of course, pieces of it remained that then shaped my life. And also that nothing is an accident, because most people would have felt like, oh, poor girl, you know, she went to France, she was having fun, and, you know, she drowned had I gone.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I kind of had a death wish prior to this. It was constant thinking of, do I want to be on the planet? Do I want to be on the planet? I'm not sure if I want to be on the planet.
And that's why you went in with the red flag, said, don't do this, don't do this. That, you know, that from an overview, that was all planned out. You were in a state of, from my perspective, you were in a state of, I don't want to say depression, but just say imbalance. And you ended up at the beach that day. You ended up with that group of people. You ended up at that exact same spot with the red flags. You saw it like a bull with red flags, you know, got to go to the red. As they say, bulls are all attracted by red. You go in there and then you hit a riptide, which is extremely difficult to get out of. You described it perfectly with the undertow. And then you have this voice whispering in your ear, which is usually an angel. And the angel doesn't say, they never say, you know, harps and angels, whatever, from my perspective, my experience. They say the exact words you need to hear, which gets you, your mind focused on the separation, you're leaving, And then you go through this big circle right back to the moment, and you wake up with this amazing, wonderful experience. And even while you're doing this, you have the presence of mind to keep your mouth closed.
Right?
Otherwise, the whipjai would have pushed the water in your lungs and you would have died. And then just like a baby being pushed up to the shore.
Jamie Gage.
And then
Carol
you have this
Kessing.
Amazing memory for 3 days. That seems to be
Dean
the length
Calipar.
Of time when you touch upon a Kundalini experience or a
Anna
middle
Gallegos.
Mind experience, shamaki, sometimes people call it, that you have this for
Council
3 days. And then you, as I was indicating, you come back to reality.
Oh, really? I didn't know that there's a 3 day thing to it, because that's exactly how long mine lasted. And
yeah,
I always wondered, like, why 3 days?
It
you
seems
know?
To be. It seems to be, mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, and then, of course, you're charged up, but you never forget. And you were reliving that experience. I could see your face beaming and your eyes were looking, you know, like you were remembering those moments, moment by moment by moment, terrifying but elating and amazing. And here you are today, thank God. And you're now able to tell people about these experiences. And what I have, you mentioned it earlier, you have wisdom and you have to read your book, then you have to do. I call that experience. And when you have wisdom and experience, when you have knowledge and experience, then you have wisdom. I got ahead of myself there. So in this book, we have just a few minutes left in the interview. I could talk to you all day.
I know, me too. I'm curious about your experience. I want to hear the details of that.
Oh, my interview's coming up. Mine was a willful attempt to meditate into a deeper state of, I call it quantum meditation. It was like the same state of mind that Edgar Cayce and my mentor, Ross Peterson, entered into. And I understand there's another man, Paul Solomon, who did it. And there's only about the four of us that seem to be able to do this, at least up until this time. And so I was there one day, and I had this experience where I could just feel myself as if I was coming, my feet and my lower body was coming. I was in a recliner chair, were coming up. And then I was only attached at the head. The rest of me was in the air. And I had that same experience. You could have said, Douglas, your wife ran away with your best friend. Somebody just wiped out your bank account. Somebody took your Jaguar and drove it off the cliff, and somebody stole your motorcycle, and on, all the things, right? And I didn't care. I did not care. And then when I came back, I still had that feeling, but I came back into my body, and the same feeling was just a tingling, vibrational, pleasant, arousing, kind of wonderful, loving feeling. And it lasted for a while. Okay. Now, in my experience, I've met people who have had the same type of willful, doing yoga and other things, willful Kundalini experiences. I don't call it that. I just say, you know, you arrived at that full self-awareness. And I've read places where if you've had once in your life, that's it. That's amazing. You'll know that there's no fear of death. I don't think you're afraid to die now, and I'm not. And other people have those experiences. You know there's an afterlife. If you have it twice in your life, you're really blessed. I met somebody who had it three times. And now they were spending the rest of their life trying to have it a fourth time. And I said to them, kind of cheeky, you know, like, you're wasting your life now. You've been blessed. You know this experience. You got to do something, not just go look for this thing. But anyway, getting back to my experience, I was about 24, 25 when that happened. And I'm reliving it now as I mentioned it. But I could feel myself come up out of my body. I was fully aware, but I was aware of everything. And so this is a true experience that you're related, but this interview is not about me. It's about you.
Yeah. Well,
you've tricked me into talking a little bit about.
Yeah, but I mean, I was really, really curious. And I think the stories like this are important because, you know, manifesting this, manifesting that is okay. Wonderful. But all that comes when we reconnect, we remember to, you know, the vastness that we actually are. And it's about kind of coming out of the slumber and forgetfulness as if that's not the case. So I think it's really, you know, on the ball what we're talking about.
Well, I wanted to tell you my experience, A, because you asked, and B, that you would know my experience, and that the people listening to this interview, wherever they are in the world, will also know that we've shared this experience, and more than likely, a few of them have already had this experience, and they're like, oh my God, what happened to me? Or, you know,
yeah,
with some sort of mentor or counsel, yeah, they can hide this and cloak this. But we're going to just a few minutes left. We're going to get you to tell us again how people can get your book. And what is a transformational coach? What can you explain that? You're a transformational coach. Your husband is, I guess, too. How do people come to see you, and what happens?
Well, they either, you know, take private sessions, and then they can, you know, come to workshops that are, you know, 6 weeks, eight weeks long, or they come to the long course where then they can become, you know, coaches themselves. And that one's about a year and a half long.
This is your business? Yes. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's basically, you know, we teach in it, how do we raise our frequency? There's some like yoga aspects of it, but really what we love to teach people, show people, is exactly what I've been, you know, talking about, how they can manifest whatever is their dream, and that it is possible. And it's just, they have to go in and find how they're stepping on the hose. And if they figure out the belief system or the reason that they're stepping on the hose, they pull their leg off the hose and everything flows. So this is the gist of what we do. And through that, you know, manifestations regarding relationships happen, healing in relationships happen. Sometimes diseases go away because it's not just one thing. It's really like with our consciousness that we work on, but rather we teach people how to work on themselves. And I think that's very, very important. How do you, because you're a wise being, we're all actually wise beings, although we might be pretending we're not. So all the answers are within us. And so when you can just get them to go down their own labyrinth and find their own codings, their own setups, I mean, the level of freedom that comes from that is amazing. And everything changes with that.
But they do need a mentor. They do need some instruction. Your book,
yeah, of course,
Money Does Grow on Trees, is a good place to start.
So, yes, definitely.
And if people do want to come for counseling, for life-changing mentoring, how can they get a hold of you?
They can get in touch with us from the website, www.ikeandesranow.com.
Okay. Well, listen, this has been a wonderful interview.
Let's do it again sometime.
And I would love to. Well, I wish you and your husband absolutely the best. We'll make it happen again.
Thank you.
You're a wonderful person. I admire your courage. And you truly can teach people, because you've been on the same path that they're on, only you're a little further down the path now. And that makes the best teacher. It's a pleasure to have you.
My guest today is
Estra Bogat. And she's in Turkey as we do this interview today. And thank you very, very much for being here.
We'll be back for the second half of our Global Village International show, taking your phone calls after this short break. If you're seeing a world of chaos, danger, and unpredictable social and political events, then we have a book for you. In fact, it's a book every person on the planet could benefit from. From Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, The New Earth opens up a world of predicted climate, political, social, and economic events. some of which have already come true. The New Earth is an updated large paperback with 100 additional pages of information taken from the Akashic readings from Dr. Douglas. What was life like in Atlantis? Did Atlanteans have technology more advanced than what we have today? When will permanent coastal flooding in Florida take place? You mentioned that Canada will be divided into three regions. Could you please clarify this? Could you provide details about Spain becoming a center for world trade? You've predicted that there will be a move toward a single religion. What will this religion look like? These and many, many questions are answered in The New Earth by Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, available now at the Douglas James Cottrell website, www.douglasjamescottrell.com. Now, the second half of our show, tonight, taking your phone calls. Now, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Well, welcome to the second half of the show, my friends. That was an amazing woman's story who I would like you to go and buy her book or go to our podcast and like it. Go to the YouTube interview, which will be coming out, and like it, and feel free to send it around to your friends. She has a wonderful book. Some of the headings in the book, I guess the contents, the one that catches my mind is, "Who on earth are you anyway?" Then, "Making failure your friend." "Under the influence of the Spencer's Law, the Pyramid of Prosperity." "There you go, Ode to a Tree." And much, much more, "The Magic Mirror." And "Once Upon a Time." Those are some of the chapters in her book, Does Money Does Grow on Trees, by Estra B. Ogart. And again, if you listen to the show tonight and you have questions, the guest tonight is still in Turkey. And we know that Turkey has suffered some major catastrophes there with earthquakes and circumstances of earth changes that have happened. I'll take your calls tonight. We can discuss a little bit if you have a question about the show tonight, or maybe you have a question, a comment that you'd like to make about what you've just heard. This is a woman who started out in the most difficult circumstances as a child, being moved from country to country as the ambassador's daughter, and then somehow her dream came true when she had $2,000 and she made it all the way to California. And thereafter, the ups and downs of that experience. I know when you're in your 20s, you can be courageous and you can be bold and all those things. But still, far, far away from another part of the world. I think when she came to America and she arrived at the airport and going through immigration, when she saw that flag that is known for freedom all over the world, that emotional response she had was probably the answer to her prayers, the idea she was coming home. Maybe she had lived in the U.S. of A. sometime in the past. That really doesn't matter so much, but the idea she had an emotional reaction to seeing that flag, the symbol of universal freedom. So America, be proud. America, know that people come to America for many reasons, but number one is for freedom. Freedom to live their life as they wish. So tonight we have some callers waiting in the queue. And for those who were on earlier, I could see you were wanting to ask a question or so. If you're listening, come on back. We're taking calls now. The number is 718-766-4421. And tonight, I guess we can say it's a journey to understand the myths that we create and live by. I learned quite a few things from this lady's interview about the things I hold as my limitations or my myths, things I was told as a child kind of thing, that they took a long time to evaporate and for me to see that they were a shadow, they weren't the truth. Some of them were told to me by relatives and others by close friends and by those who were friends who I thought were friends, but they really were pretending to be my friend, and they were insincere. As long as I was doing something for them, they were my friend, and they kept me in that sort of box. And as the author said, when you come to that point of recognition, there's a revelation, and the next thing you know, you're overcoming that limitation. And I can recount 3 times in my life at least that happened. So, Paul, you're here tonight, and we have some wonderful people who have been supporting our effort here. Who might they be? They've been supporting the Douglas James Cottrell Show and the website.
Yes, Douglas, this is just fantastic. I don't know if you can hear me. I've got...
loud and clear, 5x5.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, we've got, you know, there's some mighty generous people out there. And of course, your organization continues to grow and more people are joining us here on the Global Village radio show, as well as the podcast that's become very popular. And of course, many other entities that we've got media wise, and it just is going to continue to grow. Our YouTube channel, by the way, the Douglas James Cottrell YouTube channel has got some really great videos, interviews by Douglas James Cottrell. But we want to thank these people who just recently sent us some donations: Jamie Gage, Carol Pessin, Jean Callahar, Anna Gallegos, John Pope, and William Box, all just recently sent us some sizable contributions, and we really do appreciate the people who follow us. Douglas, you've been followed just alone on the radio show for 6+ years, and you know, you've written so many books and done so many interviews. The podcasts on your website, the MP3s that I have downloaded are fascinating MP3s. So there's so much information that you have provided internationally that is just fantastic that people are responding like this. So we want to thank them very much.
They are our friends, they're our supporters, and they help defray the enormous cost it takes to run this electronic equipment and program and time and all the wonderful things it takes to put this information at the hands of people. And it's out there forever. And that's the one thing that when that dawns on you one day, that you're posting things to the internet, the YouTube channel, to the Wake Up podcast, to the Douglas James Cottrell Show with these interviews of people all around the world. And all of a sudden, whoa, wait a minute, this is forever. My grandchildren, my great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren, hopefully, God willing, they'll be listening to me, us, you know, you and I, Paul, and somewhere down the road. But they'll probably have some sort of, you know, device on their wrist, like a watch or something that they won't need all the huge computers we have and even smart iPhones, which are getting heavier by the day. But this is forever, and this information is gained from life experiences and people I've met and my teachers and mentors over the years since 1974. So as Paul says, there's a lot of information on the website. It's very reasonable priced, and a lot of it's free. And that's why Jamie and Carol and Jeannie and Anna and John and William have contributed to putting forth the information by helping with their support. You too can do the same. Go to the website, douglasjamescottrell.com. You can sign up to be a supporting member, make a contribution, or contact me and let me know how you want to help. Everybody out there, I would really be happy if you went to the YouTube channel, looked at the videos, and you gave them a thumbs up, a like, an indication, pass them around. Feel free to do so.
This and is subscribe.
Really information. Pardon?
And subscribe.
And subscribe
to our channel.
Be a subscriber. That's where I was going to be.
Yep.
Subscribe to the channel, please, and thank you. And do it right now as you hear my voice. And again, more interviews are on the way. We have a lineup of, I would say, really wonderful. I almost want to call them super talented people the amount of people that we've been talking to recently and in pre-recording and getting things together for these shows, the podcast, and Paul's been working very, very hard at making these broadcasts very nice, easy to hear, and he's been enunciating and doing wonderful things to make it available to you, my friends out there. Do subscribe and help us simply by asking your friends to have a look at what we got and maybe like us and subscribe as well. And pretty soon, you know, the world will be listening to some really good information, all free, and they'll be able to change their lives. That's our hope. That's our prayer. And someday soon we'll be coming to a place near you with our Hope Conferences, where some of the people that you're listening to on these interviews will more than likely be there. We're intending to make this a world movement of peace and prosperity to help you. You, my friends, are important. And if we all come together, all of us have the same accord, the same mindset, we can change the world somewhat, make it a more peaceful place, perhaps. We can change it a little teeny tiny bit if we all stick together. And if we can do it a little bit, then maybe, just maybe, the path we're headed down right now won't lead us into despair. We'll avoid this calamity that's coming. However, as you know, Paul, earth changes are, well, they're just terrible. The flooding that's going on, the August was the warmest month in the earth's history. Mm-hmm. It's been up a half a degree worldwide, Celsius that is, and it's just, you know, devastating everywhere. The flooding is taking lives. The volcanoes and the earthquakes are happening. If you pay attention, you'll find that wherever there's discord in a country, civil war, social upset, injustice, that country suffers some sort of earth change, a weather change, an earthquake, a volcanic reaction, something. I think the earth is rebelling. It's kind of shaking us off like we're fleas on the dog's back trying to get rid of this, the irritation that's there. That is to say, the negativity and the inhumanity that's being spread around by some. Not everyone, just by a few. And so if we come together, listen to the people that are coming on our broadcast, they're all there to help people. Every single one is there with the ability to help change your life because their life has been changed somehow. We have a wonderful interview coming up with Judy Wilkins-Smith, who is in the Disney world. She has a new project coming up there in November. I encourage you to go to the website or to hers and see what's going on with this lady who has discovered yet again another secret on how you can change your life for the better. So Paul, as we encourage people to go to our social media, and as we encourage them to come here on every Friday night, we have a lineup of really extra special guests here in the next few weeks. What is it that we can help them do right now as they call in at 718-766-4421? Do you want to go to the phones and see who's there's a lot of people
yes.
waiting there, and we'll see if we can help them right now.
Yes, we're just going to sit in the hot seat and go right to the calls, and some may be just listening and some may be wanting to ask you a question. We're going to go to the 573 area code, the 573 area code with the 344 exchange. Hello, are you calling to talk to Dr. Douglas?
Yes, I am. Hello, how are
you
all?
You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Ethan. I'm calling from Northeast Arkansas.
Great.
Good evening, Ethan. Were you listening to the interview? Do you have a question?
Yes. I was listening to the show and I heard a lot about how we can, you know, try to do good in the world and spread light and love. And I was wondering what I can do in my day-to-day life to help make that happen.
Wow. Well, it starts with small things. There was a Supreme Court judge who recently passed away who said change, really permanent change, takes a long time. So as much as we, you and I, and people who want to contribute to the world want to see changes really fast, that wisdom is to start slowly. And I was told by my mentor, Reverend Alec Holmes, a long time ago, to go slowly. So in your day-to-day life, it's number one, start off the day when you wake up in the morning and ask or say, God Almighty, I am grateful for my life. That's number one. Number two is to practice gratitude throughout the rest of the day. When somebody does something for you, let's say you're driving down the road and somebody slows down to let you ease into the lane, or you come to a crossroad and they wave you through and they wait, something where in traffic you can't talk to them, but they've done you a favor, and you say in your mind or out loud, I'm grateful. Thank you, friend. And the third thing to do as you go along in your day is to be nice. People are people. They will be rude. They will be angry. They will somewhat get off the path themselves, but don't let their anger come into your mind. You can say to yourself, boy, they must have had a bad day. Or when somebody's going down traffic and they're cutting people off here and there, I always use the thought that, boy, they must have to go to the washroom really bad.
Right. They're more of a hurry than I am.
I'd say that again.
Oh, I said, yes, that's absolutely right. They must be needing to get somewhere in more of a hurry than I am.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So if you do that, you can be throughout the day, these become habits. And as these habits are instilled in you, they become reactions. Just like when, you know, somebody has a knee-jerk reaction, somebody screams at them and somebody screams back. That's just a knee-jerk reaction, and that's out of control. There's a moment that has taken you and robbed you of your peace. So as you mature emotionally, when somebody yells, you look at them and you say, you must be having a bad day, or I'm terribly sorry. Have I done something to offend you, or whatever it is, let me help you. And that diffuses the situation, and becoming masterful at diffusing situations makes your day better. I mean, we've all had those circumstances where we're coming home, or something's happened on the job, and we're full of anger. It's going over and over and over in our mind. It's mounting. It's manifesting. Who do we take that anger out when we come home? The people we love.
Whoever's there.
And so that's an error. That's a mistake. That's not supposed to happen, but it does. So being aware of these things when you're coming home, and maybe you've had a bad day, you say, well, when I get home, I'm going to have a drink. Well, when I get home, I'm going to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That's my favorite. When I get home, I'm going to jump in the pool. Or, you know, when I get home, I'm just going to go outside and scream at a rock, something like that. And that becomes a habit that allows you to vent whatever emotion that's been built up. But these are little habit-building things that you start off the day by saying, God Almighty, or to whomever your favorite deity is, I am grateful for my life. And then as you become grateful for all the things that happen to you, pay attention to the little things that people do for you. Because when they do something nice for you, open a door, for instance, you say, I'm grateful, thank you, and you mean it sincerely. What that does is it puts your mind and your emotional maturity into gear, and you don't get angry. You feel good. And as you start to feel good about the little things that are being done for you, those little favors, those chances, those coincidences, you know, you're in a big rush, you got to get to the store in a hurry, and you arrive, and lo and behold, there's a parking space right in front of the store, and you got 2 minutes to get in the store to buy your groceries or whatever before it closes. Those coincidences start to increase. It's all by saying, God Almighty, I'm grateful. I am grateful for my life. I am grateful for the parking spot. I am grateful that I made it through traffic. It might sound kind of too easy to do, but by practicing, you'll find that it's not easy to do. It takes discipline to do that. And then the other things I said, be nice. And pretty soon you become masterful of yourself. You are in charge of your emotions and how you react emotionally to other people, which means you get to keep your peace, which means when you get home, the wife or your spouse says, how'd you have, what kind of day was it? And say, oh boy, that was a trying day today. What's for supper? What are we having for dessert? and you're happy.
Right.
You know, that's how it starts, my friend.
I have a follow-up question then. I try to be mindful of folks, and I try to be courteous, as in the example you gave, and driving and let folks in. And I do see folks let me in, but, you know, then sometimes I see people flip me the bird, and, you know, when I really don't feel as though I've done anything to transgress upon them. And I was just wondering, how then is one supposed to deal with attempting to live I'm struggling for my words here.
I understand. Let me finish that for
a
you.
A life where they do look out for other people, and when it seems as though that's not happening back towards you, or as though there's, you know, the world can be very crude and very rude and forceful, and when you're trying to give everybody every courtesy and the world seems like it is not receptive to that, should I say, you know, what do you do? Do you just keep on keeping on? And
no, fair question.
What do you think?
Fair question. First thing is to say you cannot control somebody else's mind, and your values are different than their values, or their values are different than yours. And so you cannot expect other people to think or believe like you do. And so the world does have some pretty dark characters in it. It also has everybody on a path learning, becoming emotionally mature and spiritually mature. Well, that's a process. And when somebody flips you the bird because they're angry, or because they don't like the way you look, or they don't like the clothes you're wearing, or you're too small, or you're too tall, you're too skinny, or too fat, whatever, that's their problem. And the way that you protect yourself from that, you can say, well, there it goes. Monkey does what a monkey does. Ha, ha, ha. You cannot control and expect other people to be fair. But what you can control is yourself. And so I have a rule. Whatever it is, when you put your arm straight out in front of you, from the fingertips back, you have complete control over your world. From your fingertips forward, you have zero control. And so when somebody does something that is provocative, don't accept it. You just look at it and say, boy, that person had a hard day. I guess they don't like me. They're jealous of me, whatever you want to say. But sometimes when people are, they're angry, they're ready to lash out at anybody, you're looking at an immature emotional person. If a child was to do this, come over and kick you in the ankle, would you kick the child back? No.
Well, no.
You would know the child is just being a temper tantrum or whatever. So the rule is, my friend, to say, stand up to the strong when they're in the wrong, but make concessions for the weak. And so somebody who's weak and they're throwing you a bird or they're swearing at you or whatever, they say, well, God Almighty, send that back. I don't want any part of that in your mind. And then you continue on. And if they do something even more aggressive, whatever, then you say, you have to protect yourself, mind you. You know, self-defense is allowed, and justifiable anger is allowed. But at that point in time, if you were a ninja warrior, if you knew that there were people down the street that were going to cause, waiting for you, and they were going to cause a battle or try to do combat with you, the ninja warrior training is to walk past the street and go around the block the long way so you don't get involved in a fight. That takes wisdom. And you don't get angry over it. You don't think that person's making me walk around the block. You say, no, I'm being wise. I'm avoiding a confrontation. And learning how to understand confrontations and how to avoid them takes experience. And again, when somebody throws a brick at you, you don't throw their brick back. You throw back a balloon, perhaps. But you don't react, number one. That's it. Just number one, you don't react. And pretty soon, you know what happens? They'll go on down the street looking to somebody else to pick a fight with or to insult. Because remember this, people who cause pain are in pain themselves.
Mm.
You know, I heard that's cliche, misery likes company. It's the
correct,
same thing.
Yeah.
It's emotional immaturity. But since you're on a spiritual path, and you are, and you're having these challenges, always remember that the more you advance spiritually, there always will be an opposition. There's darkness in opposition to light. And this is your test. And when they do that to you, they're giving you the opportunity to practice what you preach. They're giving you the opportunity of a test to see if you're going to fail or react as a mature soul, a mature being spiritually. In other words, yeah, okay, yeah, that's fine. Whatever you say. I'm sorry, did I offend you? I'm sorry if I did. I didn't realize I was doing anything wrong. You know, I'm sorry. Or you can say I regret if you can't say sorry. I regret whatever. And have a good day. You know. And what you're doing is just throwing peace out there. You're throwing a balloon out there. You're attempting to control a situation. And the person will go away. If they're looking for a fight, they're going to find one. But not with you. You're not going to let it happen. All these little things, this is a very good question. And it relates to the author, which he was talking about, the myths that were told, the stories were told. And so when somebody does something stupid, we're expected to be macho and react and go punch them in the jaw. John Wayne.
Oh, and that's been my reaction darn near every time that that's happened my whole life. You know, like I said, I'm from Arkansas. I've never been a bit of a redneck. You know, I'm not I won't shy away from a fight, so to speak. And I'm just tired of that. You know, I've recently turned 30 and things have occurred to me. Matter of fact, you give me more to think about than I thought you would. It's resonating what you're saying. And
well, that's good.
I don't know. It was just funny that you mentioned the fighting and stuff.
Well, it's good because it's the truth. These are truths I've found. And I'm a little older than 30, probably pretty close to, well, more than twice anyway. That's all I'll admit to. But anyway. I used to be pretty tough. I played football and hockey. I played hockey till I was 57, and I always was sports-minded, but I was a policeman on the team. I didn't like roughneck. I didn't like dirty play and stuff like that. That's because it was coming out of my nature. The same as what is happening to you now. Your nature is not to be a knee-jerk reaction. Somebody does something and you become uncontrolled and you strike them back. The mature mm-hmm. part of you is now saying, I'm tired of that. That doesn't solve anything. If they do something to me and I do something back, they're going to do something back to me again, and it's going to escalate.
Oh, it makes more problems and my hands hurt, you know?
Okay, so there's a good reason to say, no, I don't want those knuckles to be full of arthritis in a few years. You know, thank you. You know?
Exactly.
So the first thing is to say when you wake up in the morning, you're grateful. And to realize as you're on a spiritual path, you will be tested. People will do things, try to provoke you, whatever. I'm a big guy. When I was younger, who was the first person on the street that the bully would come to beat up or to intimidate from all the rest of us?
Oh, the biggest guy.
It would be me. And I learned not to run away, but I also learned not to be provocative. I remember once a fellow said to me, what are you looking at? Who do you think you're looking at? I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at that tree over there. I'm looking at that Ford over there, a nice color green. Oh, okay. I wasn't looking at the tree. I was looking at him because he looked shabby. He was. So I said,
oh, of course,
I'm looking at the car. And, okay. And I didn't give him a cause to be provoked or to whatever his problem was. But the idea is you're getting tired of it, which means you're learning. And these experiences that you're having are showing you that immaturity is not productive. It's going to hurt you in the end. You might break your hand. You might break your thumb, not be able to work. Somebody might poke your eye out. And the risk of physical injury as you get older starts to be more important. You've got family. I can hear them. You got some boisterous members in the family behind you there. And so you got to start to take care of everybody by, in the moment, deciding whether I'm going to stand up and do battle or I'm just going to acquiesce and say, well, sorry, pal, didn't mean it, you know, whatever you say. Yep, you're right. I'll tell you this because it comes to mind. There was a man I met, older man, and I would occasionally have a lunch with him. He's a businessman. And we would have different people come to the table. And they would have a variety of opinions. And this man, when over the course of several lunches, I could hear him talk to different people. And whatever they said, he said, yeah, you're right. Yeah, got a point there. Yeah, you're right. So one day, I was a little cheeky, and I said, listen, you know, calling him up thinking he's full of BS. And I said, you know, everybody that comes here, this guy will say that's green, and you'll say that's right. And then the next guy will come, and he'll say that's purple, and he'll say, yeah, you're right. And I said, you know, so what's the truth? And he said, the truth is they're all right. In their minds, they're right. And he said, who am I to tell them they're wrong?
So all these arbitrary things, they don't matter.
That's right.
They are truly just arbitrary. Just the little cut you off in traffic, or the sky is green, no, the sky is blue. It's none of it matters, does it? You're telling the truth.
Yeah, you got it. And so are the other people that are nodding their heads out there in the audience. They're relating to all these different things. It's a really good question. It's one of the major initial steps to take when you come to that realization that this doesn't matter. I've had people come and they're really upset about something at a family member or an old friend or something. And I'll say, so how long ago did that happen? I don't know, 5-6 years ago. No, I said, no, exactly. When did it happen? They can't tell me. And I said, what exactly was it that started this off between you two? They can't tell me that either. It's because they've forgotten what the monkey does. They're still, they remember the emotion, but they don't remember the circumstances. And sometimes it's been just a misunderstanding. And so wisdom comes with all the things we talked about, starting off the day with gratitude, being grateful for the little things. When somebody does something arbitrary, you step on the brake rather than the gas and you let them go away. And they'll go away real fast, and you'll never see them again. Otherwise, stepping on the gas, you might run into the back of their car, and they might pull out guns and have a battle going on. So step on the brake. Was it too hard? My father once said to me, I was talking about something, and he said, so is it too hard for you to step on the brake? And I said, no. And he said, well, step on the brake and let them go away. Let the maniac drive away. Let them go down the street and somebody else's car. You know, that kind of thing.
Pride is a heck of a thing.
The easy way out is to be aware. And that's what you're understanding. And again, it's a really good question. It's in harmony with the show tonight. Because this lady, Esra, had, if you can imagine, she alluded to what she's going through in these European countries that were somewhat dominated by Muslim as a young lady and a daughter of an ambassador. She had to be, you know, prim and proper all the time. And, of course, her opportunities for advancement were very limited. And as she said, she was very happy to get to America where she had freedom of thought, freedom of whatever, freedom to be successful, freedom to fail, you know, things like that. So when you're grateful, you say, thank God, I'm grateful to live in America. Yeah, we got the politicians, we got the red and the blue, yeah, yeah. But I'm grateful. I can do anything I want. You can go out the front door right now and scream or go down to the store and buy something or just sit on your front porch. You can do anything you like. Nobody's going to bother you. Okay, in other countries, you can't do that. So the point is not to compare, but just to realize. And when you do that, then the little things are important that you usually dismiss, like spending time with your son or your daughter, let them sit on your lap, or you see them and they're kind of withdrawn a little bit, and you go over and say, so what's going on? And you find out maybe there's a little problem at school. or you find out that there is some sort of, you know, what can we call it, child jealousy, or, you know, let children get upset at each other, things like that. And you go, well, you know, daddy's not the best dad in the world. It's on the job training. And, you know, this is what I suggest, blah, 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 whatever comes to your mind. But the little things, all of a sudden, they become pleasurable and meaningful, and they continue them out. All those other things you mentioned, as you did mention, they fade away, they're gone, and usually you can't remember why you're upset or angry at somebody. And that is another lesson, which is when you do have a confrontation with somebody in the family or close friendships, give it some time. It goes away. And then you get to be back. You know, something will happen. You can start talking to each other again, and you just forget about what happened. So the gift of time, letting things just, I guess, fade away in time, is another thing that families and groups of people practice. They stay together that way because always there's going to be somebody's going to say something dumb. Always somebody's going to, you know, step on somebody's toes. Always somebody's going to misspeak or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And so you just go like, yeah, you kiss my wife on the floor. I don't know what you're talking about. And the guys had too much drink. And, you know, you just stay away. And you don't get upset and want to drag them outside and throw them on the ground. You just give it the time. And then a couple of days later, he comes back. They'll apologize or whatever. Maybe they won't. But it's so what? Who cares? It's gone. It's, you know, you were drunk. My wife's attractive. Yeah, I understand. No worries. What's she going to do to you? Not me.
Right. And, you know, like you say, a lot of people, they just get all worked up over small things. And there's something that, there's a term out there called first world problems. You know, it's like we don't have enough to worry about. So we just create issues for ourselves. You know,
that's right.
We can't get our food delivered quick enough, but there's somebody in some African country running from a lion, and they have real problems, and we're just over here making up problems to be upset about.
Yeah. You're right, because we're not grateful enough. I had a policeman friend.
That's what you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I had a friend who was a policeman, retired actually, and we were at my center in a place called Orangeville. And he was there one day, and there was a family that came in, and the child was in a wheelchair, the kind of wheelchair where they're boxed in. They had cushions between their legs, their back. They had curvature. They had the hand twisted back, and they couldn't quite talk, but they knew what was going on. And so they came, and I did some counseling for them and some laying on of hands, and they left. And this big, strong, handsome 50-something-year-old man said to me, you know, when I came here today, I thought I had problems. And what I just saw with this family, I don't have any problems. No problems I can't fix. And I saw wisdom in that man at that moment. And just as you're saying now, you know, there's a saying out there, don't worry about who's in the White House. Worry about who's in your house. I think
exactly.
That might have been Oprah that said that. And then it brings back home. And so if you want to be calm, turn off the TV. Stay away from those computer programs. There are news stories and opinions and whatever. Stay away from them. And if you can, this is speaking to everybody now, if you can, take your cell phone, put it in another room while you sleep at night. Use an alarm clock to wake up. Stay away from that cell phone at least half a day every week. Saturday morning, no cell phone. And you'll find it as you start to get back to basics, like going outside and walking on the grass, grounding yourself on nature, on the grass, getting outside the house, because most of the time we're inside a house or a car or the factory. Getting outside and walking on the grass or taking a breath of fresh air every day, rain or shine or snow or whatever, you don't lose touch with nature. And your whole body picks up the vibe of being outside, grounded on the ground. you know, you can't wear steel-toed shoes and stuff like that. You have to wear like moccasins or, you know, or bare feet or socks or something. You know,
goodness,
something
go barefoot.
Yes, it's amazing. And you'll see now that on the internet, TikTok and whatnot, there's all these devices that are helping gardens grow. They're taking a copper pipe about 3 or 4 feet tall. They're wrapping copper wire around it in a loose spiral. And at the top, they go around the top of the copper pipe. And then they stick about a foot or two of the wire straight up like an antenna. Then they take the pipe and they shove it in the ground. The vegetables grow better, bigger, and faster. Not because I saw them on TikTok, because I did, but I started it in my own little garden. My strawberry plants would look like they were going downhill. All of a sudden, they're blossoming. They came up with 3 strawberries at the end of the season. And the second one I started with did the same. Now, I'm getting more information about this ambient energy that's going out, and it's in the ground and whatever. Then hearing these stories about grounding yourself, walking on the grass, makes sense. And my mentor told my wife that she should do is to go out and immerse her hands in the ground. It would be like a healing for her. I didn't pay any attention to that. I don't think she did, but she did like the plant flowers. And then I understand now that there is this energy around us that is controlled, if you will, by the vibes, the thoughts, our emotions, our actions. And that's why I'm putting forward the notion in my book, The New Earth, which is available on my website for anybody listening, that the idea that the earth is rebelling, wherever there has been a conflict, either war or political or religious or something else, that country will suffer a tornado, a flood, a volcanic reaction, or an earthquake. If you
some
look
sort of
at
natural
it,
reaction.
That's right. The earth is rebelling. It's actually, I know I wouldn't say rebelling. I'll take that back and say it's a reaction. That's right. The earth is picking up our vibes as a nation or a group of people, a nation, if you will. And it's just giving back what we're thinking. Hate begets
hate. It's not rebelling. It's reacting. It's just giving off of what it was given.
Yep. So if enough of us change a little bit, getting back to my point, if enough of us change a little bit, we can change the world. Each of us, day by day by day. Real change takes time. Long time.
Boy, this is all really crazy to me because you've been making a ton of sense to me since I started talking to you. I've not thought of things in this manner since I spoke to you. And it's weird, and I hope this is okay on your show, but I ingested some magic mushrooms about an hour ago, and something just drew me to Blog Talk Radio. Just to look what was live and to see you. And I've spoken with you tonight, and I've just had so many positive feelings and good reactions. And I am barefoot right now, actually outside in my yard. And I just feel all kinds of good things right now. And I really think that has a lot to do with you and your show.
Well, you're very welcome. I guess that's where I was getting the barefoot outside, because maybe I was picking up telepathically that's where you were. So anyway.
Yeah, you very well could be.
You can listen to this show again tomorrow when you're feeling more in a memory kind of way. Just go and it's in the archive version of the show. You can listen to your question again tomorrow. And this goes for anybody out there. The show will be archived, and the interview of Estra Ogart's near-death experience and journey to understand the myths we create and live by, her book, Money Does Grow on Trees, is also available on the podcast Wake Up and soon to be on the Douglas James Cottrell YouTube channel, the interview, and also, I'll just say the interview and the words of wisdom she had. But listen, it's a pleasure talking with you. Remember, God always starts with one person to change the world. So if every day you change the world a little bit, and enough of us change the world a little bit every day, then that ripple effect is going to pay off big in time. But always, 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 the divine always sends one person into the world at a time when the world needs to be corrected. And certainly we need some correction right now. And barring that that one person hasn't shown up yet, whoever that might be, we can, by ourselves, change the world every day by doing one simple thing, being grateful. Thanks for calling in tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for all your help. I really appreciate the conversation.
Oh, you're welcome. Don't forget to go to my YouTube and subscribe now. Okay. And get all
what,
your friends.
What is your YouTube?
It's the Douglas James Cottrell YouTube channel. And you
can
put it on
my
website.
Didn't catch that.
It's Douglas James Cottrell YouTube. It's my channel. You can go on the website.
Douglas James.
Yeah, DouglasJamesCottrell.com. You can go there and then you can get a link to the YouTube. And anybody listening, if you think I've said anything tonight that is meaningful, please help. You can either sign up and help to be a supporter, like Jamie, Carol, Jean, Anna, John, and William have, or you can go and subscribe to the channel and help us be more popular out there. And I would really appreciate that. Take care, my friend. DouglasJamesGottrell.com, and you'll find your way to the blog talk, to the Wake Up podcast, and toward the YouTube channel. Okay.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Okay, Paul, that seems to be like the blog talk is behaving itself. I saw your mic was open there for a while. I saw some buttons flicking around. Are you still with us, Paul? I'm going to, there we go. Are you back there, Paul? Dare I press your mic button and open it up? Well, as you can see, my friends, Blog Talk is still challenging. We have, from time to time, the control buttons here. I'm going to press Paul's microphone and see if that'll open it up for you, Paul. I hope so. Nope, it didn't. So I guess, Paul, you're kind of stuck in limbo. We'll go to another caller and see. I think that was in the 573. We'll go to the 773 and say if it'll open up. Hello, you're on the air. Can you hear me? You're on the air. No. One more. That's somebody in Chicago, I think. The buttons seem to be working, Paul, if you're listening. But I don't know if it's actually opening up.
Oh,
we're going to this. Hi, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'm just listening. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Well, I thought, you know, I recognize the number. No worries. Okay, thank you. Okay, and we'll try Paul's microphone one more time and see if that opens up. The buttons are moving back and forth here sideways. I don't know what that is, Paul. Anyway, well, listen, we're having a little glitch with the show tonight. Again, go to my website, DouglasJamesCottrell.com, and have a look at, right on the front page, there's four, I want to say icons, but there's four squares you can look at. One, they'll take you to the podcast. One, the Wake Up podcast. One will take you to the Douglas James Cottrell channel on YouTube. And the other one takes you to the website. And I think there's one there for the radio show as well. The radio has been doing pretty good tonight. Let's take a shot at running another commercial here. And we'll be right back after this.
We're so glad you tuned in tonight to the Global Village Radio Show with Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. We'll be back in just a few moments. You're invited to embark on your own spiritual journey today by discovering the expansive works and services from Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Elevate your being physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Visit DouglasJamesCottrell.com. With over a dozen enlightening books and meditative audio downloads to help guide you through life's complexities. Delve deep into the mysteries of human consciousness, the future, and the spiritual realm. As the author of Secrets of Life, The Complete New Age Health Guide, Conversations with the Akashic Field, and more, Douglas opens the doors to realms most people only dream of visiting. The writings of Dr. Douglas James Cottrell are based on his unique ability to visit the Akashic Field, where all knowledge since the dawn of man is stored. You can read about the predictions, many of which have already come true, and planetary changes, health remedies, human growth are all written. Go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and view the selections of books and MP3 audio available now. That's DouglasJamesCottrell.com. Every so often, an individual appears who can demonstrate the ability to access the dimension known as the Akashic Field. Dr. Douglas James Cottrell is one such individual. The field is like a celestial library of all our thoughts and actions. Since the dawn of time, science is demonstrating that through this energetic field, our minds are connected to one another despite our perception that we're all separate. This is why the great religions of the world teach respect, compassion, and tolerance. They depict the field as the book of life, the source of inventions, inspiration, and insight. In the book, Conversations with the Akashic Field, Dr. Cottrell offers you practical advice from the Akashic Field so you may live a life of peace and prosperity. Go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and click on Shop. There you'll find books, meditation, and other spiritual advancement materials. You're listening to the Global Village International Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Call in and ask a question about tonight's topic at area code 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421. Now, once again, here's Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Well, I hope we, Paul, I see your microphone's open. Welcome back to the show, my friends. We're having some little glitches here with the microphones turning on and off, at least. Paul, can you hear me loud and clear? Okay, we're waiting for Paul. Anyway, my friends, we're having some glitches here, and we apologize. We're just about at the, we're pretty much close to the hour here. So, Paul, if you can hear me, let's end the show right now, and we'll say thank you, everybody, for calling in tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Again, go to my website, DouglasJamesCottrell.com, and there you will find on the homepage links to the Douglas James Cottrell YouTube channel with amazing interviews with really talented and amazing people. You can go to the blog talk or the podcast, rather, called The Wake Up, and again, that's been out for quite a while, and we have some interviews and also some really good stuff on the podcast. And again, the book, The New Earth, is available, and it's something everybody should have because it's talking about predictions, a lot that have come true, and those that are about to come true. It's a must-have book if you want to know what's going to happen around the world. So with that, my friends, on behalf of Paul Hughes at Hughes Media One, who has been producing the show tonight. We have I'm the executive producer, and we have co-host Doug Bentley, and we have our engineer, Jack, standing by on the Zoom. So we hope that everybody is here next week. We have another exciting guest. This lady next week is a medium. She's coming, and her name, I think, is Miriam Witz, And pardon me if I've mispronounced the name, but she's going to be here next week and we're going to do readings for you. Okay, so next week, same bat time, same bat station right here on the Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Douglas James Cottrell. And remember, the journey doesn't stop here. We're exploring the human consciousness, and we hope that tonight this has helped you a little further down your path. Take care and God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Global Village Online Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley. Brought to you by MindProbe Publications and Productions, a division of Douglas James Cottrell & Associates, Incorporated. Copyright 2023, Douglas James Cottrell. No part of this broadcast audio may be reproduced in whole or in part without expressed written permission.